Welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast. I'm your host, Hattie Ashdown, and mum to two feral boys. Join us as I welcome a different mum every episode from the world of comedy, as we give no judgment, no filter, but all the laughs on this crazy ride of parenting, work, and being bloody great women.
Happy Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day!
Hello, welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast. I'm Hattie Ashdown, and my headline today is how to deal with throwing up on your birthday and on Mother's Day. More of that later. And my co-host, of course, is the wonderful Gemma Beagley. How are you?
I'm all right. So my headline is I spent Mother's Day morning in the pissing rain watching a bloody nine-year-old playing football. Happy bloody Mother's Day.
Happy bloody Mother's Day.
And who's now sick? Who's now sick from playing in the rain?
Oh, he's not got the bug then.
So, no, I've just drugged him. I was bashing the end of the cow pole bottle just to get the last drips out so we could go to school. Because I'm too busy to have any bloody time off work.
I had that tonight. Mine were both going, Mummy, I don't think I'm going to be well enough for school in the morning for no reason at all. And, you know, I just went mad at them and I went, well, I can't look after you. I'd have to get a babysitter. They went, yeah, we don't care. It's like, but I was praying for coldy at the weekend. I was just like, I'd rather have a cold or flu because I could drug myself up. But when you feel the sick bug coming on, there is nothing you can do. And I'll get into it later maybe. But yeah, I was ill because I want to bring our guest in. I want him to share in this because you know what it's like when you feel like you're the only person who was ill and missed their birthday. So before we get into that, we hope you're okay. So this is Funny Mummies podcast. But we are having we have let another man on, another dad. We've got to give them another chance to show.
We've run out of women's. I think we've run out of women's, I think.
We've run out of women's. We've run out of funny mummies. And he's a good friend of mine. I've known him for donkeys, actually. I don't know how long. He was born and raised in South Mead to a Bristolian working class mother, a traditional Iranian father, often described as high energy, physical character comedian, actor and writer, including working with Harry Hill on TV projects. One publication says he sweats a lot on stage. With 10 Edinburgh shows under his sweaty belt, as well as a hit. He's a hit in the children's show world, especially with his latest show, Mr. Sleepy Bum, which I believe has been nominated for a Leicester Comedy Award. And he's also in the Bristol area known as Terry the Odd Job Man. He's quite famous on that there, YouTube. And most importantly, he is a father of two. It is Jodie Kamali. Please welcome.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Good evening. Good afternoon. Good morning, wherever you're listening.
Yeah. How's it going?
Welcome. Do you think you're a funny dad?
I'm a very funny dad. I'm already an embarrassing dad already. I embarrass my daughter's six and she gets embarrassed. She's like on the way to school. Because a lollipop man, I always go, I'm just gonna lick the lollipop to see if it's real. I've been doing that since she started school.
And she goes, have you?
Yeah, I was like, I'm just gonna grab it and lick it. And she just goes, don't dad, embarrassing me. So she gets very embarrassed.
Through the tooth. Don't
yeah,
do
she's
it.
Very much like that. Yeah. Because the headmaster's Mr. Green and he greets everybody every day. And I'm gonna just go up to Mr. Green and go, why aren't you called Mr. Blue? Just so it's stupid, like, just really stupid. Like, you know. So she's just like, don't stop it.
So how old are you? Because you've got two, haven't you?
Yeah, six and almost four. My son's going to be four on Saturday.
Oh, one of each.
One of each.
She's got one of each. We don't. Yeah, we're boy mums here, so we don't know this. The vagina, a girl. You know, we don't know.
It's a nice balance. It is. It is a nice balance. Nice
balance. Oh, good. Good for you. So what I did forget in your little bio there, Jodie, is I should have put that also you're a fabulous promotions event manager.
Yes.
And knows how to when to give breaks for people that are working on a sugar puff promotion.
Yeah, that's where our first job was for a glycoma awareness. That's where we
So me and Jodie worked in the promo world together.
Yeah.
Glycoma.
You would have seen us you would have seen us in a Blue Water or a Tesco's in Essex or something.
Well, yeah. Mightn't have seen you at all, I suppose. Yeah.
Yay! Oh,
So with the sugar puffs, we had furry feet. Remember furry feet.
Oh yeah.
And I did that job in Bristol as well. And I saw this old twat of I haven't seen him for years, Andrew Hoskin. And he came in and was like, Jodie, you're doing well, aren't you? You know, just like looking at me in disgust, where he's like, we had like blue and white pajamas and furry feet, didn't we?
Yeah.
Is he called a honey monster? Is he Honey Monster?
It was a honey monster, yeah. And I drove a
honey
massive...
Monster. It was Honey Monster.
I drove a massive army truck around the country, basically. Decorated with is a honey monster, and then you could the horn would be like, "I love my honey." When you press the horn.
Oh, you got good. I'm remembering now a big truck, and I remember. Do you remember that I was the honey monster?
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Yes. So if you wanted a bit more money, and obviously being tall, I was like, "Yes, sod it, I'll do it." And you put I'm sorry, kids,
it's
if you're listening.
Disgusting, though. It was absolutely
disgusting. It was
disgusting.
So disgusting, putting on the suit. Well,
my best friend is, as you know, has his Andy from CBeebies. You know, and all the mums and dads.
Yeah, there's a clanger. He's dropped a
I got Andy because Andy was on CBeebies, but it paid so bad when he started. I said, mate, do you want to be the honey monster? No one will recognise you. And I got him to do it. I gave him the hurt, and it absolutely stank. It smelted like rotten.
Like sugar puffs.
Yeah, sugar puffs. Like gone off milk, you know. It was just like
gone off actors.
And I was like, mate, you have to do this job. Like, and I was like, it's like, mate, I can't do it. I said, please, you know, he was there and he did it. I got him to do it. I said, please, the kids. I was like, and there he was. I said, if only these kids would know that's actually Andy from CB.
I know. Yeah. God, he didn't do the days I did, obviously, because it must have been we were alternate days or something. I don't know.
I did it for months on end. We went all around the country doing it. Mental, yeah.
I met somebody who claimed that Bungle lived in the flat above them in Collier's Wood.
What?
The dude in the Bungle suit. And he said he was very grumpy. He's very grumpy.
I can imagine they all are, these children's old school, especially old school.
Yeah.
Andy's not. Andy is what you see, honestly, what you see on TV. Like, he's always like that all the time. He's just like, hello, kids, all right? I'm Andy.
He really is, isn't he?
He is like that. And they're all like that now, because I've met loads of them over the years, because, you know, when he started, he's been doing it almost 20 years. Like, they're all lovely. They're all so lovely, chatty, warm. But I think these old school children's entertainers, like Rod Hole, Emu, apparently Rod Hole was like bitter, twisted. They're all a bit... bitter and twisted, and
do you think they're all like failed? Do you think they were failed actors, whereas, you know, the next generation were kind of wanted to be?
Well, apparently Rod Hole used to get jealous of Emu, because Rod Hole was a comedian in his own right, right? So and then Emu came in, and Emu became popular, and apparently he thumped him and threw him across the room. Because he was like jealous. Because everyone loved Emu more than him. Because he's a really good comedian. Apparently, in his day, he was actually a good solo.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it used to be seen as a down thing of like whether it be you were going to be a comedian, but it was like, well, get yourself a poppet and then you can entertain the kids, get yourself some money. And it was sort of seen as like, well, that's not really what I want to be doing. Whereas, yeah, I think a lot of people going to CBeebies, that's what they want to do, and they respect what they're doing.
Mm, they totally do, yeah.
But jealous, that brings me into what I wanted to talk about. Many things I want to talk to you about, Jodie. You know, normally we might have a topic, but I think we're going to have many topics because this came up. So jealousy, which is a nice tie in to emu. Now, I don't mean in a sort of big way of like, you know, jealous of everyone's career or your own puppet. But this came about through, I forgot, because it was my birthday this weekend. I didn't forget that. I'll never forget that now. And my son, when I was talking about it the day before, as I was saying it, I remembered, oh, he hates people having a birthday. And I started to, but I thought I was getting excited because I get excited about other people's birthdays. And so I was saying, oh, it's mummy's birthday. We'll be able to do this. And where do you want to go for dinner? You can pick. We can go. Da-da-da. And he went, what? He went, I don't like your birthday. There's no present for me. And he starts kicking things. Oh. And going mad.
How old is this one?
Now, okay, he is 5, but he has had this. I forgot. I was like, oh yes, he's had this. Every time someone has a birthday, we have to hide, sort of like really play down our presents.
Wow. And
I said to Gemma, I might be opening my presents in the bathroom. But he actually turned over a bit. What I had to do, Gemma, was that thing of I had to let them help me open the presents. That was the only way. And then they were really disappointed when I opened it. It was a bottle of gin.
Well, my son's like that, weirdly, in that from birthdays. Yeah, he was. It was my birthday a couple of weeks ago, and he was like that as well. I went down, my daughter hugged me, and my wife, Zula, was like, Max is upset. He doesn't want to say happy birthday. His head was dang. And he said, no, I'm not saying happy birthday. I'm not saying happy birthday. I want it be my birthday. And then we had later in the day, we did the happy birthday with a cake and he ran over just screaming, no, no. I was like, come and help me blow the candle. He's like, no.
They're little shits. But I mean, what are you doing that circus? Because I remember before I had kids and I used to see people like, you know, letting their kids blow their candles out. And I just think, I'm not going to do that because it's not teaching them that everyone has their day. And now I would do anything, you know, I let them spit all over my cake. I don't care. Just have some peace and quiet.
I find it funny. I find it hilarious. We were trying not to laugh. There's something very funny about it.
I guess it's just if he...
I don't know why. It's just so innocent. They're so innocent and getting so jealous.
And it's understandable, I guess, but... It's almost as long as they grow out of it by the time they're 18.
I'm like, can we have, what about, can I just have my turn for attention? You know, can I have a little bit of attention? Because our lives revolve around you guys. Why can't we have a bit of time, you know?
I think you just love presents.
I mean? Yeah. Did anyone, I remember when I was a kid, my mum and dad were kind of just, they were never really like a lovey-dovey couple at all ever. But if they were ever... If there was any kind of affection, whether that is a kiss on the cheek, happy birthday, or they met dancing, and so if they, you know, sometimes they would dance. Oh, it's a drop. Oh God, and I'd be trying to separate them. No.
I
hated it. Yeah, because it was just so weird and alien that they were showing each other attention. I couldn't. It wasn't so much, you know, showing me attention. It was just felt disgusting to me.
No, I was opposite. I was desperate for my mum and dad to be lovey-dovey. I'm trying to think if anything I was jealous of as a child. I mean, I think I was pretty jealous of everything. To be honest, it's probably where he gets it from. I think I was pretty jealous of everything. But
what age were you, though, when you felt? What age were you?
Yeah, probably similar, like 6, 7. I mean, is there, because I know Gemma does, and I want her to tell us her jealousy thing. That sort of makes you go, you know, like, okay, so one of mine is, it's two things, actually. I get very jealous of people that got an island in their kitchen.
I've got an island, sorry.
Oh,
well, we moved to the coast to get that, so we wouldn't have got that in London.
That's true. You've literally got your own island. I do. I'm just like, oh, you can stand there and you can sort of cook, but you can talk to me. Whereas like, I'm in the other room, and which I know it could be good. I mean, I've got a child that's trying to get through. What's the matter?
You're listening to the Funny Mummy Podcast.
Yay!
Now can I go back?
Yeah. What are you jealous of as an adult then? Jenna, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so when you were talking about Buster just raging at other people having birthdays, it reminds me of, and I still now, at the age of 43, if someone tells me they're going to New York City, I can't bear it. I can't bear that I'm not going to New York City, right? I can't bear it, and I don't want to know about it. I don't want to know about it. I can't control it. Ridiculous. I'm really unhappy and jealous when people go to New York.
I take it it's because you love New York.
It's because I love it, yeah. And I think I should have had the opportunity to live there at some point. And so when people go and live there for the weekend, I just can't bear it. There you go. Oh. That's my silly little thing.
What about someone saying, if anyone's moving there, then Jesus, God help them.
Yeah, except that when they move, that they're not going to move to New York City, are they? They're moving out to like Rochester or something, out in the sticks. Yeah, that's it. That's my silly little jealousy.
I think it's quite nice. Like, it shows that you've got passion still. Do you know what I mean? And I love the honesty, because I think we. No, I'm really happy for you. And it's like, no, I just don't want to know.
No, it's just like, no, sorry, I can't bear it. Do not talk to me about it. Yeah.
I think it's quite sweet. I think it's, but I will be noted, if I do go back to New York, I won't tell you.
Just lie.
I'll just lie.
Somewhere else.
Have you been to New York, Jodie?
I have, yeah, a couple of times, actually, yeah.
Oh.
I took my mum for 60th. And then I went on a, before that, I just went on a whim, right? And I got a flight with Air Kuwait, a £250 return.
Look, bloody hell.
2010, what? Yeah. And I stayed in a hostel. I stayed in a hostel for 2 weeks.
Hospital? You hospital must have been in a hospital.
And it was like the cheapest trip ever. It was amazing. I just was like looking. I was like, 250 quid. And it was the most awful flight. It was so random. It was like, Air Kuwait, do they even have an airline? And it was falling apart. Like, everyone was complaining that the seats weren't working and that the armrest came off. You know, the armrest like literally just fell off. And I was like, it was really ropey. And but for 250 quid direct from Heathrow in Wrighton.
And what did you do for 2 weeks? Seems like a long time.
Oh no, it was, I felt like I started to see the real New York, because you hang out with other travelers and then you sort of go beyond the like the touristy things and start to sort of really but you just start to see things more. You've got time to just walk around and, you know, and I found like, mm-hmm. I could have stayed there for a lot longer, you know, so you find these ultra cool bars, coffee shops and other areas that
you've got time
that wouldn't be on the top of the list. Like I went with my mum and we did like a 6 day trip for 60th. It was always her dream, you know.
Oh,
we just went. So we went and it was just, again, we just did all the classics. But compared to the 2 weeks where I just had that time to just mooch about, and it was really cool. Yeah, love New York.
What's your favourite part then, both of you?
I do like Williamsburg, Brooklyn's quite cool.
I liked Lower East Side, very cool down there, very alternative, lots of kind of punk rockers knocking about and arty-farty people and stuff, yeah.
And that, what's that and big, is that the former train line on top? What's it?
The High Line.
High Line's very cool, I love that. That's great, walking along there.
I did not think we were going to talk about, I don't know, I only went for quite a short trip, so, and it was not long after, well, I say not long after, it was when Ground Zero was like where everyone wanted to go, so it was like, say, 3 years after 9/11, so, yeah, that sort of tinged it a little bit.
That's your highlight.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my highlight. But I remember saying Brooklyn was my favourite. Just general Brooklyn. Just the minute I got off the subway, I was just like, I feel like this is, I could live here. You know, I was all into my record stores and that then. So I was like going around the record stores, flicking through the records, thinking I was so fucking cool.
Just get lost. I think that's it. Just spend time to get lost. Go long enough, you just get lost. That's what I did. Get lost there. And yeah.
Do you think people come to London like that, Jody?
I think so. I think it's, I think you would. I think it's a great, London's a good thing to do, you know, do that. Just get lost here and whatever, do whatever. But, yeah, oh, another thing. I just randomly went in. It was, random street, and it was full of like fortune tellers in shops, like one person in a shop, and it was like I could tell you fortune for $5. So I went in, there was this one woman like in a shop in a window with like two chairs, and I just went in, and she came out from the back and said, just sit down. We're sat there, full view of the shop, people walking by, and she just read my palm or something, and said that I would meet someone in Europe,
right?
And
fake
that, and that will be the be your true love. And I did. 2 months later, how weird is that? I took a spontaneous trip to Barcelona, and that's when I met my now wife of 12 years.
Weird
is that for $5?
New $5.
Just like she was like, for an extra $10, do you want me to cleanse your auras? And I was like, oh no, I'll just stick with the wife that I'm going to meet in a couple of months.
Oh yeah,
literally, you can just go up. Do you like me to cleanse your auras for an extra $10? I was like, no, I'll just stick with the $5. So stingy. Oh god, like $5.
Oh god! Have you had your fortune told, Gemma, ever, or any of that?
Oh yeah. I mean, the last time I went, I did a phone consultation because I'm a very busy woman, very busy working woman. This was years ago, and he used spirit guides. Well, I went to him first, and it was 2nd of January of whatever year it was, 2nd of January, and he started off and he said, no romance for you this year. I said, it's the 2nd of fucking January. Sat there with the and I tell you, he was right. But then a year later, I had a phone consultation with him, and he kind of laid out me meeting my husband to be, and that became my husband, and all the troubles that we would have early on in the relationship, he kind of listed them out. Yeah, it was pretty extraordinary, really.
But did you pay $5?
I didn't. I paid a bit more than $5.
Yeah. Wow.
But I've been sick, so I don't know. I don't want to know.
Never anymore. Ever. I've never ever.
You?
No. I know. I seem...
You just seem like... you would put a crystal ball and you would go hand in hand.
I know. If we were on that panel show, like, which of these has had their fortune told?
Yeah, exactly.
It would be
me. Don't you think, Jodie? I mean, I'm surprised that you've never had your spirits read or whatever.
Like, you know, Clinton Baptiste. You know, Clinton Baptiste. Yeah. Do you know Clinton Baptiste?
I was in like a bit of a sort of like old man's boozer. I think I was with my ex-boyfriend, who I'm still friends with, and he was like, oh, come on, he's from Leeds, so I'm going to try and do his accent just because it's funnier. And he was like, come on, let's sit this. And this woman's sitting there, like, you know, it's like put £2 in the pint glass type thing. And he had his fortune told, but she was so rubbish, and I was like, no, thank you. And I just sort of stood behind him, and she just, one of the first things she said to him, and he's like the skinniest man I know, like he's very skinny, and she just said, I think you might have some issues with food. It's like, oh, she's good. So,
but they look so cheesy, don't they? You see like posters of them, and you know, Derek Johnson, We'll be telling your fortune. They look all a bit kind of kooky, don't they? And old school and cheesy.
Yeah,
I just think I just see it as like over 50s. You know, like women or something. Fine. I don't know. Like just in there trying to. My mum is into all that. You know, she's big yeah. into that. She's gone like with her sisters. They'll go to somebody every so often. Every like.
Well, they're on TikTok as well now. Do you not see them late at night? They crack me up. No, have a quick look on TikTok. It's hilarious.
No, I ain't what? Getting on that. I don't want that in my algorithm. I don't yeah. want it.
So TikTok, which brings me on nicely to our working class roots.
Nice
it doesn't
segue.
At all.
Segue,
but I really love the bad segue. Yeah, because I was thinking, actually, I thought, you know what? I've not really talked about. Well, I guess it's not like I go, hello, I'm Hattie and I come from working class roots. But I thought
she don't shut up about it, Jodie. She doesn't fucking shut up about it. You know, it's like
she's doing it for the grand
box, bloody box ticker.
I'm a box ticker now. I don't realize I am a box ticker.
You're underrepresented.
So it was Jodie Kamali who said to me about this organisation called Best in Class, mm-hmm. and was started by the wonderful Sian Davies, who supports and wants to put the word out there about needing more working class voices in comedy, in TV, in creativity. And Jodie told me about their bursaries they do a couple of years ago for Edinburgh to help with accommodation. And I applied to that. So thanks to you, I got a bit of help with that. And yeah, and then because I guess I've never really thought about, it's one of those things that you gravitate to people. And it's only now I'm older, I sort of think about people and go, oh yeah, I guess it is maybe because we've had similar sort of upbringings and stuff. You know, again, I know I mentioned him last time, but I can mention him every podcast I've got. My wonderful friend Darren Maskell, who died, and I didn't even realise till someone said something, and I was like, oh yeah, that was another thing that gravitated us together was going into the comedy world, and there being so many. Let's be honest, it can feel like people that are able to do something. Which, let's be honest, when you first start, or even when you been going for 10, 15 years, you don't make a lot of money from. So therefore it attracts people that have come from a privileged background. And so when you meet certain people, you do gravitate to them because you're like, oh, okay, you have something about you that's similar to me that we, you know, I mean, it's like certain people I know did stand up as children. That would not have been something that was accessible to me, Jodie.
No, I think it's become, I think what this whole thing is what I've realised is that, you know, like it's become normal for certain acts to, you know, you see all these acts that have the full shebang, the PR. But how are they getting all these reviews? They got PR, they're spending money. How, all the posters, this, that, that. I was like, where does that money come from? I can't do that. I just can't afford it. I can't afford to lose that. I just can't. I cannot go into debt. And yeah. then it, you know, this whole best in class movement woke me up really and going, actually, yeah, that's how they do it. People are somehow quietly are getting mummy and daddy's money. You know, I've never taken a penny. My parents can't give me that kind of money. It's always, yeah. I'm still paying off Edinburgh debt now. And I still sort of am very careful what I spend, you know.
Yeah.
And if I do, I'm like, oh God, I've spent that money. It's not like money off, I lose it, whatever. So I think it's woken a lot of people up. Actually, doesn't have to be this way. And yeah. there is it an unfair advantage? I think it is. If we had top PR, you know, pushing us, working for us, and, you know, for with our shows, you know, a limited amount of money to pump in. And I just think, you know, It is, you know, wouldn't have to work doing day jobs, you know, dressing up as the honey monster. I guarantee they wouldn't have done that, you know.
No.
You know? But, well, we should have been working on our craft, right?
Yeah.
And there we are in Romford or Bolton in an Asda, you know, and then we're like, we should be down doing that, but we can't work on our craft because we're working and this and that. And then if we do it, it's like, well, I've got to do it on a budget. Oh, I can't really afford this. you know, even now I'm doing Edinburgh, I'm like, I say, oh, can you reduce, because I'm doing one of the big venues, like, can you reduce the deposit a bit? Because there's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it would help me out, you know. And they were like, yeah, we can do that, you know. I even asked them for a better percentage. But I bet you, middle class people don't do that, you know. I bet they but don't. I don't ask. Because I was like, yeah, I was like, if you don't ask.
You taught me that as well, Jodie, actually. You know, if you don't ask, you don't get. And yeah. I think, like, that's the perception of a working class person, bit of a wheeler dealer. But I mean, I guess, you know, that's how we sort of have to be a little bit. And I loved you in that. So we did this working, Sian organised this day, Let the Ruffians In, to a TV
workshop, wasn't it?
TV workshop, that was it. And there was about 35 of us, wasn't there, all crammed into this room.
From all over the country, Northerners, Southerners, Welsh.
Yeah, I love, you know, that array of accents.
Northern Irish, yeah.
Was so amazing.
Brilliant.
But when we were talking to the head of, you know what I'm going to say, when we were talking to the head of Channel 4, the head of comedy at Channel 4, and you spoke up, I felt like I was in one of those movies where it's like the miner strikes or something.
Yeah.
Everyone was being quite polite, and then you got up and I was just like...
Well, it got my back up. I mean, it was just like, we were there, like, they're supposed to be like, you know, as someone said, it felt like probably a tick bucket exercise for their point of view. But I was like, I'm not having this. I'm not going to be there. And we're just going to listen to their spiel, what we're looking for. And I was like, what you're saying doesn't include the demographic of people that I grew up with. Because I mentioned to her, there was an interesting fact, a survey of Ofgem.
Ofcom.
Ofcom regulator. It said that working class people are not tuning into TV. They're going on social media to find what they are into. So basically they might be watching a working class mum, whatever, TikTok, working class mum talking about being a mum or doing this and that, working class comedian, or someone just, you know, making sort of videos, which I do, this character I do is a working class character. I have working class people follow me, and I felt and I said to her, well, they're watching me and they're not watching your TV channel. So what did you think about that statistic? And she just didn't even know it. She didn't even know that statistic. That
didn't even know the report, did she?
Yeah, and that's your job. And I was like, a bit like, and all these things that she's looking out there for, it's just like, it doesn't include us or the stories we could tell from our upbringing.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought there were so many unique voices in that room. It wasn't like a room full of Oxbridge, all the same, all sort of a little bit. Blah, 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 blah. You know, it wasn't just the same. You know, everyone had, I haven't been in a room like that for ages where everyone was so unique and quirky. Yeah. And God, if you're in a room for, I'm not dissing working, you know, middle class Oxford types, but they are very similar in characteristics. I just feel like, what sort of stories do you have? You know, give us a chance and we can tell a story. We've got stories to tell. I tell you, it will be interesting and people will watch it. And she was just a little bit, and I think I said it in quite a, you know, I wasn't angry, but I was very passionate.
No, you wasn't. You were passionate. She was passion.
Taken back. She was taken back by it. And I was like, well, no, I'm not having you. Just, you know, we're here and we're not, this is not just, you know, a little kind of box ticking exercise. No, we mean business. We're here.
Yeah.
What provoked that? And I guess, but
it was comedy bursting.
So what provoked that reaction in you?
Because I was sat there the whole afternoon just watching it all. And I was like, and what she was saying, like, well, you know, this is what, if you want to get involved, oh, we go up to Edinburgh, we go to MacFest. I was like, well, that's, Edinburgh costs a lot of money. MacFest is just a cool kids club. You've got to be invited. And that's the places they go. And I was like, well, why don't you go to other places? And I also said, like, you know, what she was saying, what they're looking for is like entertainment. It's like, it just didn't include, like, what she's looking for is not a working class sitcom. It's not another Alma's Not Normal. You know, remember, it's all, we want a Fleabag. We want the next Fleabag. Well, where's the, we want another Alma's Not Normal, which was a hit show. Mm. You know, This Country, which was a hit show. So why aren't they looking for that? And I just wanted to say, like, you need to be looking out there, because I feel no offense to her, she's very middle class. I felt like she is looking as for things that reflects based on her. So she will be looking, yeah, or any comedy commissioner, from a working class, because that's what she relates to. That's her background. But if you had someone from a working class background, I guarantee that person will be looking for voices in their community. They will be looking. I would, if I was in there, I was like, I just want to, I know out there there's really interesting stories from working class people. So what, that's what we need to bring in. And that's what I, that's why I had to say. So I can't just sit here and listen to this.
I've heard, was speaking to other artists about, I call them artists now, Jodie. Now
I was going
to
say,
I call them artists. They're not comedians, they're artists. But if they, bullshitting it. If, so speaking to, so they were speaking to a black artist, comedian, who, and he's had a bit of TV. Success. He's had work on TV,
and he was say his name.
No, of course, because it doesn't matter really. But what he was saying is that it's just this thing of like the talent is diverse, but behind the camera, and the writers, and the executives, and the accountants, and like everyone else in TV is a white, you know, Oxbridge or whatever, or, you know, just that kind of middle class. It's, you know, actually it's just this thing of the people making the decisions are posh people, you know.
Well, funny enough, I did a table read. I don't know if you've done many of these, Jodie. So I just had to, you know, and go and read the script for this sitcom, which, funny enough, recently got an award. And I won't say which one it is, but the writers are black and the predominantly black people in it. But that was something I did notice, was a lot of the other people behind it were not. And I also know some of them, and they are poshos. They are, you know, I know they're from, because I know one of them is someone who was linked to my sitcom, and he comes from a very privileged background. And that was some of the problem when I did my sitcom, was that some of the writing, which is something I would have loved to have said that day, but I didn't want to come across as like, well, I've had a sitcom, was
get out. There
was stuff that they would sometimes go, would that really happen? And I go, yeah, it happened to me. And these Oxford types would just not believe that these certain things would happen. Mm. And I would go, yeah, that happens. And it was like, oh, okay. So then they just don't believe it. So they don't put it out. And you're fighting for this joke to be put out. Mm. They think, oh, no, it's too unbelievable. And then you're like, no, but it happens. So, yeah. But...
I think there needs to be a shake-up. But how can you do it? Like my wife works in an, you know, office job, and she said all the interns now are really posh because they get like £22,000-£23,000 a year, and they live in London. So they're not, I mean, that's not a massive wage for London. So they're just all posh, and they all live at home. Yeah. And they're just no like working class, because no one can live off that and live in London. They can't do it. And so they all like, oh, we've got to let you go now. And they're just not fast. They're like, oh, well. And one of her is intern that she works with, you know, he's lived in Waterloo, earning 22 grand a year on his own. And it's like, he's got rich parents. And
and
she finds him a bit of a spoiled brat, you know.
God,
so I'm not sort of pigeonholing and saying all middle class people are this. But I just find that interesting. Where is the... You know, we need to bring through working class people through the ranks, you know, to give them the opportunity and not be like a tick box in like, oh, let's get a token. Let's go to the local council states and just pick one. Just go and pick one and bring them in. You know, it's got to be that influx of. But how can you do that? How can you when people are struggling at the bottom and there's the talent that are not getting through the ranks? You know what I mean? Like I came from, my mum's a single mum. She knew I was into drama. She did everything. And there was a TV station in Bristol that had like a young person's workshop that they would use for telly, and you could audition. And she's like, you know, well, let's just audition. And I got in, and it was the other side of Bristol, and I was still young, and she'd get me a taxi because she couldn't get me there because she was doing part-time work. So she paid for me out of all the little money she had to get over. She did everything for me. And, you know, without her, you know, I wouldn't be where I am, really, because I feel like she's really helped that. And it was a struggle, you know, but now I find it would be impossible for young kids to get into this, and it's just going to be difficult for them.
Well, from the, yeah. Sorry,
you know what I mean? So how can we get these people behind the scenes in, you know, what's needed for it? I mean, that's up to the TV production world, isn't it? I don't know that world, but that's what it needs.
I mean, they're stuck in it really, really boring now, but there are government tax breaks, for example, to bring in people. However, bringing in people, it costs money, and if you're in London, it's not enough. It's not enough, you know. People will still have to live in, you know, not even zone six, like way, way out, in order to, and then spend most of their wages on a train fare. But someone who works with me, she came through on a government scheme where the government basically paid for a part-time role, and she came in and did finance with me. And she's very working class, you know, quite a dysfunctional background. Joking, she is brilliant. She is so fucking smart. She is so smart. But she's just never, I think the job centre made her apply for this position in a theatre, right? She just wouldn't have ever, she wouldn't have even known that to apply for a job in it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think the government could, there's stuff that the government could have done and can continue to do, but she still has to get like 15 buses to get in because she can't afford to get on a train.
But there's also another thing. I remember the Scottish guy, he's a producer. He used to produce like Mock the Week and things like that. Really lovely guy. Scottish guy, came from Account State. He was one of my favourites, actually. Really real, very lovely, very giving. And he said, like, he went back to his old estate, you know, to see his family. And he was like, which really stood out for me. And he said, you know, it's this old guy he knew from school came up to him. He's like, "Oh, what are you doing now?" And he's like, you know, he's sort of even trying to talk more Scottish. Like, yeah. He's like, "Oh, I'm like a producer, executive, whatever, producer for this, for, you know, for this program." He's like, what, you? And went, yeah, me. And I think he said to him, "Well, why not me? Why not me? Why can't I do that?" And he said he felt a bit of imposter syndrome, which we all resonated with that. And we feel we don't belong there. But it's like, why me? Why not this girl that you work with? You know, that's probably why she thinks that I haven't got the call. There's no way. And I do, from where my estate, where I came up in my council estate, it's like one of the most deprived areas of Bristol. And people will look at me and go, how on earth did you get to be a comedian and do this and do that?
It's and like, almost like when he said that, Jody, it made me think, oh, I've had people that almost seem like they're a bit angry. Like, I mean, obviously I've had the thing of, you're not that funny. I'm funnier than you.
Was now, like, I think for my own kids, you know, it's like, we just feel, if you want to, you could do anything you want. Why not? There's no limitations.
Yeah,
I felt like I had limitations from my mum's side of family. Definitely.
Did you?
Like, yeah, it's all like, you've got to get a job. My cousin is a plasterer. You're not thinking you're just bumming about up London. You've got, look at me, I get up, it's so, I work hard. Just because you're a labourer, you work hard. It's like, yeah, mate, it doesn't make you different just because you're physically working hard. You're burning, just because you're burning more calories than me doesn't make you more, do you know what I mean? It's like that. It's like, you're bumming about. Now he sees I'm doing okay. I'm making a living from this.
You're getting treated differently now.
Yeah, he's just like almost, I'm not saying it, he's always like, wow, you know, I can see it. But he used to diss me. I was a bum. He called me. When we were drunk, it was when I was about 33. I'm 44 now. So I remember we all went out, very rare drink in Bristol with the cousins. And, you know, he said, I think you're a bit of a bum. At the end of the night, I came home and I was wailing in tears. I was so upset.
Oh.
So upset that they thought like that's what my family are talking about for me. And I was like, they don't yeah. understand. And that's what he said. Well, I'm a plasterer. And I was like, now I go, well, look, I've worked hard, because you can't earn a living in a comedy if you don't work hard. So it's yeah. honestly, it's that mentality. How can anyone succeed if someone says you're a bum? Like, it could turn anyone off. Like, just, you know, we tell our kids, you can do what you want. It's not, you're not a bum. Just try, do your best in anything you want to do. And eventually you will probably get there, but just don't give up, you know, just, and there's this sense I feel in the working class communities that you're just limited to maybe being a work your way up from a laborer to a carpenter. But, and that's got to change. It needs to come down. It's got to change that actually you can go beyond that, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. I'm going to misquote it, but that wonderful actress from The Holdovers that won an Oscar, and she, something that stuck out for me that she said about when you're an actor, because you're used to these knockbacks and stuff and rejection, the resilience that you build up makes you this sort of like, although it can, you have to have a certain amount of, she didn't use the word ego, but it was something like that. And I know what she meant, as in self-belief, you have to keep going, but that also it makes you a better person. I'm misquoting it.
I was listening to Chatterbix with Brian Joe Wilkinson and Chatterbix podcast, and Ricky Gervais was on there, and David Earl and Joe Wilkinson, and Ricky right. Gervais was on there. Ricky Gervais said I feel for people who didn't work before they got fame, like have a job, a day job. I feel yes. for people that didn't have that life. And I found that really resonated with me.
That's
that.
True, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't have all these stories
Hugh Dennis.
About
yeah, well Hugh Dennis, I mean, he said, like, when people ask him, like, how do I make it? And he said, stay in your job as long as you can, because that is inspiration for comedy and for writing, you know, just try and stay normal as long as you can. It's quite interesting.
I think this country
couldn't have been written off the top of someone's head.
No.
Right? You know, it's like someone had to live that freaking life, right?
And Give Out Girl couldn't have been written if I hadn't have been in a sugar puff.
There you go, it's true. Different angles, you know.
Well, would you put your daughter on the stage, as they say, Jodie?
Let's go back to the jealousy on that point. Are you jealous of middle class? And I'll be honest, I used to be really jealous of middle class people. Growing up, 100%.
Okay.
I feel like they got it. Like, I have to work so hard, and I felt like they were just living in very comfortable lifestyles, homes. And yeah, that I used to get jealous, because I feel like
more of the money or the
I just feel like the what they were given, like the, you know,
privilege.
Because like I started off in drama, in Bristol, and they're all middle class, quite posh parts of Bristol. And sometimes you go over to the house; it's these beautiful houses, Georgian houses, you know, £1 million, and you're like, oh. But I was jealous of that. I was like, well, look at me. And I was a little bit ashamed, because I lived in this really, you know, a council site. It's kind of ready brown brick council house. And
Could I ask you, so about being ashamed of that, now you're an adult, has any of that still stayed with you?
No, do you know what? Opposite. Deeper. Because when I used to never say, because they were all posh, and I live in Clifton, and it was just really part of Bristol. And I'd be like, if I said Southmead, I'd be like, when I grew up in the 80s, it was rough. It was like cars on fire. It was like proper rough as hell, to the point when you go, I'm from Southmead, they go, and people used to say, like, oh, well, I would never go to Southmead, because I felt like if you're an outsider, they would duff you up. But obviously they knew my family was in that community since it was built in 1930. So we've got this history, and everyone knew you and you were safe. But I never knew that. But I used to be ashamed of it. I never said I was from Southie, but now I do. So when I would meet a posh, usually I go, oh, where are you from? I'm from Bristol. I know posh. And I'm like, I know exactly where they're from. Yeah, they're from that area. And now I would tell them from Southie. And they kind of look at me and like, how did a person like you get out? You know,
get out.
I'm proud of it now. I am like, this is where I'm from. I say it in my biogs. And
yeah,
this is where I'm from. This is who I am. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the knocks. I'm proud of the sights and scenes that I saw. I'm proud that I grew up in, with a mum, a single parent in Bristol, you know, I have no shame in it now. I feel like it's interesting. I'm different, you know. But yeah, to answer, I got over that.
Yeah.
You don't need to be ashamed because you're trying to fit in, because I can't say that because it's also middle class and I've got to be like this. And I was like, my accent, at one point in my 20s, I really almost lost my Bristol accent because I was trying to fit in. And then by the time I got to late 20s, I sort of dropped the accent again because I just want to be me, and I just stopped pretending. So my sort of accent has sort of come back a bit, you know.
I feel like, was that when I would have met you? Because I do feel like when we reconnected through comedy, your accent did seem stronger. And I was thinking, I'm sure when we did promo, your accent wasn't as strong.
Because I was putting it on. Yeah, I was like trying it. Probably, well, no, I think I got it into like as a habit of not.
Yeah.
But my family now, they would call me posh because the way because I'm not as strong as the accent as them. Because like, they're a bit more like Bristol, a bit more lazy, a bit like that. So
right, yeah.
So I am. They would say I'm posh. Don't Jody speak nice? That's what they say. Don't he speak nice?
Well, he does. Believe it or not, I used to get it as well when I went to uni and I'd come back. They noticed a difference in my accent, but not now. It's gone back again.
Because the best my mum was the other day, I said, "Mum, I think you just need to tweak that a bit." She went, "Oh, I don't understand what tweak is." Bless her. I was like, "Mum, you know," I was like, just a bit, you know.
Oh, but your mum is a glamorous legend.
very humble, my mum.
Have you got any kid logics? I don't think I've got any this week. Anything that we always like to, because sometimes it can feel, actually we haven't, I always say this about this podcast, is that it's not a parenting podcast. We just happen to be parents. So, but sometimes we might spend the time moaning about kids. So I like to end on a positive note. And kids can just say the most
funniest, cleverest thing. Yeah.
Well, they say the funniest thing, but the most, sometimes just so wise. And you're like, yeah, you just cut through the crap. I mean, this sounds a bit dark, but actually tonight my son was getting a bit upset, you know, about he's I think someone's bullying him again at school. And he was like, I just want to say, because I just tried to say to him, like, why? Why? And it's like, it's so true, isn't it? It's like, got no reason to. And I was like, mate, you're never going to get the answer. It's like, and then I don't know what to say to him. But yeah, he's... very rational about things normally.
Well, I've got one. So I do, as you said, I do a kids show. So in the kids show, it's about
you must get so many.
Yeah, sleep. So it's about sleep. So in the beginning, so I'm playing Mr. Sleeper when I wake up, and I basically, the whole point of the show is I recreate the dreams that I had, right? So I'm on as the audience come in, I'm sleeping, and then I wake up like, oh, there's these kids in the room, parents in the room, and then I say to them, oh, what's going on? I went to bed in my bed last night and I've woken up in a room full of a theater full of kids and parents. Am I dreaming? Am I awake? And they go, someone goes, awake. I don't know. Am I dreaming? Can you slap me? And one kid went, I think we're all awake in one big dream. And it just stopped the room, like,
wow.
And everyone was like, and I went, whoa, all awake in one big dream.
That, like, is so profound.
Yeah, which are all just a dream. This is one big dream, but we're all just awake within this dream.
Yeah, see?
And it was beautiful, and it stopped people. The room went silent for about 5 seconds. Where all the mums and dads going, ah. Like the Matrix, you know.
Yeah, and then they get older and dilute, and they lose all that.
Yeah.
But honestly, if ever you're stuck on something, sometimes when you are single parenting, I don't know whether your mum did this with you, is because you lose that partner to talk about the most mundane things. I find myself talking to them about really mundane things, and yeah, they give me some great answers. And I advise it to anyone. Ask your kids, like, include them in more.
Well, and they say why. Sometimes they make more sense than you, and they just go, why? Why? And when you go, oh, yeah, I'd actually do it.
Which is what a therapist does, doesn't it?
Why? Yeah, but why? I'm like,
yeah.
Do you know what? That's a very good question. I actually.
Good point. There's no point me going to work.
Why do you need money?
Why go to work? Well, thank you, Jodie. We will declare you a funny daddy for wanting to lick the lollipop lady's
I will do it. I will do it by the time she's from school.
So before you go, how can people follow you? And yeah, have you got anything coming up? Well, I know you've got loads of stuff coming up.
Well, do parents listen to this then?
Yeah, of course.
A lot of parents do. So yeah, if you're a parent, you've got kids, I'm doing a tour of Mr. Sleepy Bum. It's going all around the country. I'm doing a week in London at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park in end of May, the May half term.
Oh, are you? Oh, I'll have to bring my kiddos.
Yeah. And also I'm doing Edinburgh with the kids show. And I'm also touring in October, doing a 6-week national tour. So just remember Mr. Sleepy Bum. Yeah, so the people out there listening. So for my kids, but I also do adults. I'll be doing adult stuff as well. So lots of fun stuff.
What's it called? I love the title of it. I've just forgotten it. The Love One.
Oh, Things We Do for Love.
Things We Do for Love. Oh, see, I just come on the title.
And I'm revamping my show Ironing Board Man, which is me and eight ironing boards. Yeah, revamping it, rebranding it, tweaking it. I'm just doing it in Edinburgh again.
And when do you find out about Leicester Comedy
Awards? Oh, that's next, the 18th.
It'll be soon. Oh, exciting. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Tell a friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast. Thank you to my co-host today, my guest, and today's show was edited by Scott Kingsnorth. Thank you so much for listening and supporting this show. If you'd like to support it more, I know you can do even more. You can follow us on Instagram at funnymummies_podcast, and that'll tell you all the updates. You can also support us by buying us a coffee or something on one of these fangled things called Ko-Fi. I'll give you the whole address. It's ko-fi.com/HattieAshdown_funnymummiespod. Got that? Thank you for listening, subscribing, and taking the time for you.
Happy Mother's Day!